Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show today. Pedro Gomez from the World Series, which gets going. Nats Astros tomorrow. Michael Fabiano will be with us from the NFL Network on all the fantasy football news from the weekend and a look ahead. I'm really looking forward to John Wilner being with us. I like all of our guests, by the way. Don't take it personal. But John Wilner does the Wilner hotline around college football and the Pac-12 in particular. John Wilner is really well-versed, well-read. He will join us on the Pac-12 and ASU, national perception, U of A. As we get closer to November, that is all straight ahead. I had an up-and-down weekend. Eric had a more up-and-down weekend than I had, and I'll get to him in a minute. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. When I talk about Sagicor Now, I do so proudly. It's been over a year that they have been with us as the title sponsor of the show, and they've been with us for over a couple of years now. I really appreciate all the people at Sagicor. I went out and got my license. I believe so strongly in them, and I've been able to help people along the way. When I talk about Sagicor Now, I just tell people, go online to their website and start researching. Look at where you're at with your life insurance first and foremost. But they have several other programs there that can help you out wherever you are in your space in life. You have a 401k you need to roll over, you're looking into annuities, whatever it may be, go to sagicornow.com, sagicornow.com, and get your free quote. Look online at Sagicor. We, again, appreciate their support of what we do here at Sports 360 AZ. So Friday, I had some personal stuff that I'll talk about a little bit later in the show, as I apt am to do on this program and just be an open book about things. But on a more business side, hopped on a flight, went up to Salt Lake City with our good buddy Tim Hovick from Santan Ford. Tim said, you must go on the road. We believe in what you're doing. It's time to tell those stories this year around ASU football. So everything with Tim is first class. We fly first class. We stay first class. We eat first class. And so we come back gorged. We just come back like toads, I think. I don't know if Eric's a toad on this. Was a trip, so Friday night, you were at a place where I'm going to make it sound like I'm being flipped, but I'm not. You had a more interesting weekend than I had. Because Friday night, you're at a high school game and gunshots rang out.
Yeah.
that's the best way to put it.
Not to bury the lead, but yeah, that's the best way to put it. So.
So where were you and how did this, what happened?
I was at Fairfax High School.
Why?
South Mountain was playing Fairfax for essentially the Metro Section Championship. Fairfax has been the alpha dog of that conference for the past 8 or 9 years. South Mountain had never beaten Fairfax before at a varsity level in football, and it was essentially a bump-out game. The champion would be crowned whoever won that game, but the game obviously...
And you've been doing a lot around South Mountain over the summer. You went with South Mountain.
Yes.
You've gotten to know the two coaches,
yep.
The brothers there. Eric led the charge, continues to lead the charge on what South Mountain is doing in their rebirth and reborn. So you're at this game. Set the scene about what happened.
I was standing on the Fairfax side of the field on their sideline, and with about 2 minutes and 20 seconds to play until halftime, it was in between a play, so the stadium was quiet.
Your camera was
so
off in between the play, probably.
Yeah, I wasn't rolling, but yeah. The camera was on, I just wasn't rolling.
Right, right.
And suddenly there was what sounded like 6 or 7 firecrackers going off somewhere around the stadium. Those firecrackers turned out to be bullets.
Behind you, in front of you, to the sides of you?
That was the $64,000 question. Because
okay.
When you're in a football stadium,
yeah.
No one really knew exactly where the shooter was. In the stands, on the sideline, on top of the press box, wherever. And the most surreal thing about the experience, Brad, was there was like a 3 or 4 second almost pause after the shot stopped, and then it was just complete chaos. You had students scrambling down from the stands, and the coaches were on the field telling all the players to get down their stomachs, and it was it was something I hope I never experience again.
Wow. And so I don't know about any of this until I start getting news stations texting me saying, hey, can we get Eric Sorensen's video? Do you have content? Like, well, what happened? And the two teams, so you're the only one out there for this game, I'm assuming, from a media standpoint.
AZ Central had a couple of people out there because they're doing a documentary series, a really good one on South Mountain throughout the season. So there were some photographers out there, none that I knew, but...
Right. So this is all going on. The game is going to be called, you probably thought, right?
When the stadium was empty, the teams were in the locker rooms, the two athletic directors, the two South head coaches, the Fairfax head coach, and the officials gathered on the field. And initially, the AIA told the officials that the game was going to be stopped. And they started discussing options of to maybe start the game Saturday, potentially start the game tonight, restart the game tonight on Monday. And after 10 to 15 minutes of discussion, they decided to reopen the stadium and restart the game. And again, it was like it was like 2 minutes and 10 seconds before halftime.
Good for them.
And then they shortened the halftime.
Yeah.
And it happened to be Fairfax homecoming, so all the homecoming halftime festivities were scratched. The dance that was supposed to be Friday night got pushed to Saturday. And they did catch the person, I guess, who fired off the bullets. They collected the bullet shells.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah, it was just a pretty crazy scene.
So you're seeing all this, and it's like, I'm just out here doing a game because I got to get to Utah the next morning. So you do your thing on Friday night. Saturday, you go up to Salt Lake City, and you just walk into – was that the worst game you've ever traveled to? Because I've been to a few. I remember a Cardinal game in Cleveland where they were losing 50-3, I think, to the Browns back in the Buddy era.
Weather-wise, it was definitely the worst game I've ever shot from the field weather-wise, because
rain turned to snow while the game was still going on for
After the game ended, when I was doing my stand-up, looking like Eminem on the field,
that was
with
awesome.
My beanie.
Yeah,
thanks Jordan Hamm for putting that all over social media.
That was great.
You saw the game. Like, it was not a. It was not a pretty game for the Sun Devils. They got completely dominated.
Pac-12 officials blow again. They just let the thing get out of hand.
Yeah,
I thought.
I agree.
Totally.
But Utah was clearly the better team Saturday.
No,
I'm not going to take anything away from the Utes. Like, Kyle Whittingham's team usually plays good defense, and Jayden Daniels had, what, 26 passing yards?
Yeah.
Four of 18.
He got smacked in the mouth in the very first series.
They shut down Eno, and that was pretty much the game.
So Eric had some post-game, and here is Eric. We'll go to this now from post-game. This was in Salt Lake City, and this was late on Saturday night, so you get a full feel around ASU.
Arizona State's offense Saturday here in Salt Lake City was about as bad as the weather. The Sun Devils managed only 136 total yards as Utah starts fast, finishes strong, and sends the Devils home with a 21-3 loss.
Defensively, we kind of held in there for a while. And then I think at the missed field goal, we got some air out of us, thought we could get it to one score. And then they hit a big run on us, and then that was about it for us. I mean, we were pretty much done. It was going to be very difficult to come back from 18 points against a defense like this on the road. So
we knew coming in that they're a good defense. It's just some things that we got to fix as an offense. We didn't have our best game today, but, I mean, we just can't dwell on it. We can't dwell on this moment. We just got
to
move on.
They beat us to the punch. They just beat us to the punch. We would do something, and they would get to us. So you got to give those guys a lot of credit. They beat our tails.
The Sun Devils are back on the road next week as they head to Pasadena to take on the UCLA Bruins.
Jared, can you just back that up to where Eric is standing there on the field? And, you know, come on in. So I want to back this up to where Eric's on the field, because Jordan decided to go on social. Can we just get a quick shot of this? Or even at the beginning, it doesn't matter. Can we just get the analysis here? Is your mic on? Is your mic on?
Is it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Your mic's on.
We're doing this on the fly.
Yeah, let's go back. Just go ahead and rewind it on the air. It doesn't matter. Fans, what we like to do is take you behind the scenes of how we put this stuff together. I did not tell Eric anything other than just do the story. So this was the look that we get from Eric Sorensen. This.
And I get it. It's cold. But really, essentially, what I told Eric off air is anytime I see a white dude in a beanie, I'm going to think 8 Mile. So I saw that, and I put a side-by-side on social media of the two of them, and it actually kind of worked.
Yeah.
And Eric will admit that that was an accurate depiction.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Jared. Just put it back up. It's fine seeing tape move forward. We're not we do things behind the scenes here. Just scroll through that. Go all the way to the end. And then just freeze it when you get to him at the end. You know, yeah, there you go. There you go. Just get to him at the end. Because that's what we want to see here. Because we don't get this look out of Eric very often. We don't get that. You can just freeze it there. Just stop. Yeah.
And I shot something at that stadium a couple years ago, and yes, it was very cold and the skies opened up. But
he looks like he should be in Seattle, like at a grunge 1 a.m. deal.
When I saw that, I couldn't not think of Eminem and 8 Mile.
See, I don't mind Jordan taking a semi-shot / poke fun at me.
Yeah.
But for you sitting up in the comfy press box, just kind of, you know, drinking your hot chocolate and poking fun at the person
really
who's
nice.
Been sitting in the
rain. I also sent that from the comfort of my apartment under like a blanket or two.
Must be nice to be the CEO of the company, huh? Yeah.
All right. You can get out of here now.
I just
wanted to pound on him a little bit. All right. Pedro Gomez is next from the World Series. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, so Pedro Gomez in Houston for the World Series. He's going to join us, we believe, here shortly. He's down there with ESPN, so we'll switch things up a bit and go over to the Cardinals. The game yesterday, so they've won three in a row. They beat three teams that aren't any good. It doesn't matter to me. It's the fact that they've won three in a row. They have not won three in a row since 2015. And while you could say the Giants are not good, if I'm going to sit here and parse apart the Bengals and the Falcons and the Giants, I'm just going to say they're not good teams. The Cardinals, to me, look like a team ascending. You know, yesterday they did not have David Johnson. And so they were able to go out with Chase Edmonds. And then Chandler Jones was a wrecking ball. He had four sacks yesterday. Doesn't matter that the Giants' line is not good. Doesn't matter that their coach made some decisions that I thought were questionable at best. Chandler Jones also had a fumble recovery and forced a fumble. And then Patrick Peterson coming back to the team. Patrick Peterson yesterday, I don't think it's any mistake, any coincidence. They got an interception finally. Finally picked off a ball. And this, I thought, was the biggest play of the game, where Pat came on a corner side blitz and just took the Giants and beat them up. And that was that. So here they are at 3-3-1. And they're in a division where the 49ers are just rolling, where John Lynch has spent five first-round picks on defensive linemen. And they're just rolling through people. And the Rams are up and down. The Seahawks one week look great. Then yesterday they look pedestrian. And then there are the Cardinals, who nobody's saying this is a Super Bowl team. Nobody's saying that. But what we do want to see is a team that makes progress. For me, okay, I am seeing progress, obviously. They have more wins now than they, you know, at this point last season, they weren't close to this win total. And so here they are with New Orleans coming up next. Now, the Saints are in a space where Drew Brees is out with an injury, but now Drew Brees is saying, oh, no, not so fast. I do want to play this week. So they have Teddy Bridgewater, who's not lost a game as of yet, and the Cardinals may see Drew Brees. I think the other big story is David Johnson out with an injury. It wasn't disclosed. What a shock. Injury reports. I'm going to talk to Michael Fabiano about that here in a couple of minutes. The Cardinals are in a space where they didn't have David Johnson. Chase Edmonds was terrific. He goes out and gets the three touchdowns on the day. But today it comes out that, well, you know what? Things aren't good at running back. So the Cardinals are going to bring in Jay Ajayi and Spencer Ware for a look-see. If you bring in Jay Ajayi and Spencer Ware for a look-see, that must mean that the injury to David Johnson is far worse than what they are letting on. And they didn't even let on. So it wasn't even an injury report thing. He only carried the ball once in the game against the Giants. So Jay Ajayi, Spencer Ware being brought in. Drew Brees wants to play. So there's a lot going on around the Cardinals. That's what's going on that front. Over on the World Series side, look, I got off the plane on Saturday night and Altuve had hit the home run. And so it's Houston against Washington. And I'm immediately thinking about all the Diamondback angles because it's pretty easy here in this postseason to do that. And I think it's Greinke and Corbin in game number three. I know Scherzer's in game one. I know that Pedro Gomez is in Houston, our good buddy with ESPN and good talking Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with Pedro. How is Houston?
It is a little muggy.
Yeah.
A little steamy.
Is this the World Series matchup you had envisioned at the start of the year?
You know, I did think the Astros would be here. I actually had picked the Rockies at the beginning of the year because I thought they were making incremental improvements, you know, the last few years, and I thought they were ready to make the leap, but obviously they were not. But when you look at it, you know, it's an old cliche, Brad. We always talk about this. Pitching wins.
Yep.
If you have pitching, you can get deep. You look at these two rotations, they are the deepest and the best rotations in baseball, and they're the ones playing.
Well, you also have to have a 5'6" second baseman who was at a Lancaster Jethawk at one point, was Jose Altuve. Have you seen a guy this diminutive do this well at the big league level?
I mean, there's been small players before, but I can't. You know, Pedroia had.
Pedroia, a good had, one. That's a good one.
Had, yeah, he had a couple of, you know, really strong seasons. He was an MVP. He was a guy that absolutely, you know, fell into this category. I think Altuve's run has probably gone on a little longer than Pedroia's, but Pedroia certainly would qualify.
If you had to take one of the two pitching staffs, top to bottom, bullpen, everything, which one do you take in this series?
Probably Houston, top to bottom. But, you know, you don't need 11 pitchers to win a World Series. If your starting staff can go 6-7 deep, you can shorten that bullpen, and that's what the Nationals did against St. Louis. You know, in the four-game sweep, three of them went at least seven innings. And then in the final game, Corbin went five. But you shorten the bullpen, and all of a sudden the warts you have in the bullpen aren't as exposed. And I know, look, we live in a day where bullpenning has become, you know, the in thing to do in October.
Yep.
But that's not the way to win. You still need starting pitching. And you know, Sandy Koufax used to talk about, he was asked about what a quality start was to him, and he said, a quality start for me is when I'm shaking hands with the catcher at the end of the game.
Mm.
And, you know, we've gotten away from that mentality.
Pedro Gomez joining us from the World Series, Washington at Houston, game one tomorrow night at Scherzer and Cole. Game two is Wednesday night, Strasburg and Verlander, and then it is Greinke and Corbin for sure in game three, Pedro?
I wouldn't say for sure, but it's probably likely. We're going to find out a little later today.
Okay. Gerrit Cole, so this is it for him. He's going to get paid boatload of money here in the off season. And is this somebody that fans of the Diamondbacks should be looking at saying, well, they spent money here once, could they do it again? I don't think so, but fans ask.
Yeah, I don't think so either. When you look at the Diamondbacks plan and how the Greinke deal just, you know, really was tumultuous for the organization, and it was not a good thing necessarily. I doubt it, but Gerrit Cole is going to get paid. Starting pitching still matters, and we're seeing it right now. You know, Patrick Corbin got a big, big payday a year ago, and he's in the World Series. And the Nationals knew, we have Scherzer, we have Strasburg, we need to add to that so that we can get to October. And sure enough, Corbin played a big role, a significant role in them being here.
And you have the general manager, Mike Rizzo, was with the Diamondbacks, as you and I know full well from the past. A.J. Hinch was here and gone, and it just wasn't his time. It was a little ahead of the time, to give them some credit. So the angles here around Arizona are many, many. Is there anything around the Diamondbacks, and I'm putting you on the spot on this because I know you've been doing Cardinals as well, but in the World Series, sometimes you hear things. They don't have a pitching coach out here yet. I don't know if you've heard anything on that front. And have you heard anything at all about what they might do in the offseason, or is it just, Brad, it's too early?
It is a little too early. I'm sure that they have their plan, but the plan doesn't always, you know, mean that it's going to happen. They've got some ideas. You know, you need pitching. You need pitching to be here. And I know that there's been a lot of talk, well, Robbie Ray's a free agent a year from now. Why don't they look to trading him, getting something for him? But you need Robbie Ray in the rotation.
Yeah, yeah. No,
you know, they added a guy like Gallen at the end of the season, and Gallen looks like he's going to be one of the five. They're certainly hoping that Taijuan Walker can come back. But, you know, no guarantees when a guy's coming back from Tommy John surgery. You don't know how that's going to be. They've got to load up. They've got to load up on that rotation. And I would say that doesn't preclude them from making moves before they hire a pitching coach. I don't think they're going to wait a long time, but
you can load up the pitching staff without having a pitching coach. A pitching coach should be able to just step in and work with whoever's here. So, you know, and by the way, when you're mentioning ex-D-backs, Max Scherzer.
Oh, Max, of course. Right, yeah, there. Yeah.
Top of the list. Three Cy Youngs since he got traded.
Yeah, yeah. No, I should.
Daniel Hudson, another guy, yep. The closer for the Nationals. I mean, there's a lot of angles here that have their tentacles tied to the Diamondbacks, which lets you know, hey, at one time, this was a club that was procuring really good players, which means it probably still is right now. That's not a bad roster. They did do fairly well this season. They just didn't have what it takes to cross the finish line. But, you know, Mike Hazen has done a very good job, and I would be surprised if they don't go after pitching. I don't think they're in the ballpark for the elite pitching out there like a Gerrit Cole, but that doesn't mean you can't make moves to bolster yourself.
Okay, before I get you out of here, your employer had you all over the Cardinals, and then they sent you to the World Series. So I can ask you, are you surprised that the Cardinals have won three in a row?
Well, I was told by somebody who works there, coincidence or not, since I left, when I covered my last game, they were 0-3-1, and now they're 3-3-1. So they're kind of telling me, why don't you stay away longer, Pedro? You know what? You could see that look, Kyler needs time to understand fully what it is to be an NFL quarterback. And I think we're seeing that improvement on a weekly basis. And really, when you step back and really look at it, it's only been 7 games he's played.
Right.
So he has made incredible strides in a very short time. He's kind of a freak in the sense of that, you know, NFL defenses, you can't really prepare for a guy like this. There's very few of them. I mean, you know, there's a Lamar Jackson, there's Russell Wilson, and now it looks like Kyler Murray's in that group. But there's not many when you consider there's 32 teams. So it's really difficult to prepare for a guy like this. And I think what we're seeing is a freakish player.
I'll let you go off that. Safe travels. Enjoy your time at the World Series. Thanks, as always.
Okay. See you, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez there in Houston. Up next, Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I always love having Michael Fabiano on, the Hall of Famers with a senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media week by week. I don't like wasting Michael's time, so I'm not going to talk about Jose Altuve and the Yankees. And I do have to talk to him about Spencer Ware and Jay Ajayi at some point, which I'm sure Michael's like, really? That's where we're going to start? But we will begin there with David Johnson. How are you?
I appreciate you bringing up the bad memory of Altuve hitting the home run on Chapman. I'm doing okay. The Cardinals are sort of at the center of the fantasy universe right now, because not only did Cliff Kingsbury not let us know, not that he needed to let us know, but the injury report was useless because no one thought that David Johnson was not going to play or that Chase Edmonds was going to see the bulk of the backfield touches. But that offense against the Giants outside of Chase Edmonds was dreadful, and a lot of people were hoping for big things from the likes of Larry Fitzgerald and Kyler Murray and David Johnson and didn't get it. So now we're all concerned, because when you start hearing about teams bringing in players for tryouts like Jay, like Spencer Ware, that has people sort of reading the tea leaves and thinking that David Johnson is hurt more than we all thought he was.
Yeah, well, and look, 36 runs in the game, and they only threw the ball 4 times in the second half against the Giants, who aren't good. They stink, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you look at it with David, and by the way, injury reports nowadays, most, you probably know, but you have to know, because this is why you're the Hall of Famer. Which teams are being truthful, which teams aren't, which coaches are being truthful, which teams aren't, right? I mean, there's got to be some of that that goes in each week in what you do.
But I mean, that basically just makes injury reports useless.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Teams have to honestly give the injury report and honestly report on a player's status. And if I remember correctly, David had been limited in participation in practice last week, and no one really saw this coming. I mean, it has happened in the past. I mean, I remember examples of players who were active and barely getting any touches or none at all. Willis McGahee was one that I remember with the Baltimore Ravens several years ago, where everyone is expecting him to have a big game, and he was active but didn't play. And, you know, Chase Edmonds has been getting more touches in recent weeks. In fact, he was a guy that was starting to build standalone value, but no one saw this coming. And now, if David Johnson is going to miss time, like, Chase Edmonds is going to be one of the two most popular waiver wire ads heading into week eight, and he should be.
Michael Fabiano with us, the Hall of Famer. Okay, let's run through it. That from the Cardinals, unless you have something else you want to add on them, I want to move over to Mahomes. What are you seeing? Sure. What are you hearing? That, I think, is the other one I'm getting bombarded with questions about today. You got to ask Brad, the Hall of Famer, about Patrick Mahomes and what to do.
So from what I've read and heard, it's all optimistic to the point where people are talking about him missing three games and not many more. So that's good news. It's a week-to-week thing at this point. And if you're looking to replace him, which you can't, but looking to get a quarterback, maybe Sam Darnold's out there on the waiver wire. I can't imagine Josh Allen's available. But if he is, go get him. Jacoby Brissett is another player who's, I mean, boy, you know, what a game he played yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
He could be potentially available off the waiver wire. I mean, the good thing is that at the quarterback position, we've had, you know, some significant injuries, you know, with Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, just to name a couple. But a lot of times you can replace that position off the waiver wire much easier than say, running back or wide receiver, which is probably pretty thin at this point. But it's going to be hard to replace Mahomes. I think you're still starting Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. I don't think that's rocket science. You got to play those guys. But, you know, the lesser players, the Mecole Hardmans, the Marcus Robinsons, for example, hard to play those guys now. And that backfield situation has been a nightmare to try and predict. I can tell you that right now because, you know, one week it's Damian Williams, and then the last couple of weeks it's been LeSean McCoy, but none of them are doing anything. Mm-hmm. And you would think that they're going to lean on the run a little bit more now without Mahomes, but we just don't know who's going to get the football. So it's been a bit of a guessing game in that Kansas City backfield, and that's unfortunate because coming up next is a Green Bay team that has not been great against the run this season. So it's been a guessing game, and the Chiefs' offense has gone from one that you're basically looking to acquire shares in to an offense with a lot of question marks.
Okay, we are hearing today that Drew Brees is going to work out this week. That doesn't mean, because they have a bye the following week. So to me, it feels like Bridgewater's playing so well, but I don't know. Do you keep an eye on Drew Brees potentially playing against Arizona this Sunday, or are you staying away from that? What are you hearing there?
Well, I don't know that Brees is available in any leagues. If he is, obviously go out and pick him up now. I wouldn't think he would be available.
Right,
but
right.
I would expect the Saints, considering Bridgewater's undefeated, that they would stick with him in a home game against a defense that is beatable without question. So then you get an additional week for Brees to get healthy, and then you see him back week 10 against Atlanta just in time to destroy that defense. So I would think that Bridgewater would be under center again. But if Brees goes out there and practices well and he's ready to go this week, Sean Payton may just give him the reins of the offense back.
Okay, before I get you out of here, I'm going to run a bunch of names by you just down the list. Ask Michael what's going on in Denver with Sanders. What's going on with Denver?
So there's been rumors that he is on the trade block, and I think that might end up being a good thing because the Broncos' offense is awful. Their running game has had some success this season between Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. But if you watch that game last week, I mean, Joe Flacco was a statue back there.
Yeah.
And Drew Lock is going to be coming back from injured reserve here in the next couple of weeks. But from what I'm hearing, he's not ready. Like, he is not ready to play in an NFL game. So if the Broncos throw him out there, man, that's bad news for Emmanuel Sanders and Cortland Sutton. So I would seriously be keeping tabs on what you're hearing and what is out there on Twitter from some of the NFL insiders about that situation in Denver's at the quarterback position, because if they go to Drew Lock at some point during the course of the season, that's going to be bad news for the rest of that offense.
Melvin Gordon on the goal line. A lot of questions, a lot of expletives that I cannot use. Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, and the thing is that So the positives are that he's getting opportunities. They're trying to get him the football. The bad news is that he hasn't done much with it. You know, he did have that one touchdown, but
yeah.
Then couldn't punch it in from the one, then fumbled the next one, and, you know, had a very mediocre stat line. This offense was running far better without him. I was talking about this on our podcast, how, you know, has any player who's ever held out hurt his value any worse than Melvin Gordon? Because the Chargers were better without him. They were. Maybe not depth-wise in the backfield, but they were a better offensive team without him. Keenan Allen was putting up great numbers. Austin Eckler was putting up great numbers. And now this offense is sort of stuck in neutral, and they don't really have that identity. They're really trying to force-feed Melvin Gordon the football. I mean, they're playing the Bears this week. There's only two teams on a bye, the Cowboys and the Ravens. And the Bears have gotten crushed by running backs in their last two games. So Gordon is still a flex starter, but Eckler continues to be the better of those two backs. And hopefully Gordon will turn things around. But if you're going to take a positive out of things, he is getting opportunities. And he hadn't played football in a while before he came back. So maybe he's still knocking a little bit of the rust off, but it hasn't been good so far.
Matt Ryan, ankle injury. What are you hearing? Getting questions about Matt Ryan.
Yeah, so from what I've heard, it's not that bad. And that means there's going to be a chance that he plays this week against Seattle. But they also have a bye in week 9. And this season is lost for Atlanta. I mean, their head coach is on the hot seat. They're terrible. So you could see a scenario where they decide to rest Matt Ryan this week. Then they have a bye in week 9. He comes back in week 10, ironically, against Drew Brees and the Saints. If the Falcons do go with Matt Schaub this week, I would pick up the Seahawks defense in every league and stream them, because Matt Schaub loves to throw the football to the other team, and he has also been nicknamed Mr. Pick Six in fantasy circles, and that's not good if you're a quarterback.
Two wide receivers, and I'll let you go. DeSean Jackson and Golden Tate showed up on the stat sheet in New York with the Giants yesterday. DeSean Jackson, Golden Tate, what are you seeing?
I thought Jackson would be back by now, but he hasn't been. So, I mean, this is another situation where he's a player who's week to week. He's got Buffalo this week, so if he comes back, it's not a great matchup. So he's a stash for me, you know, at that position. And then the other wide receiver that you had mentioned.
Golden Tate.
Golden Tate.
Yeah. And he showed up yesterday.
Well, Golden Tate, well, he showed up. He had the best stat line of any wide receiver to face the Patriots this season. And the Giants are without Sterling Shepard. He's dealing with a concussion still. And if you look ahead to the Week 8 schedule, you'll see a matchup for the Giants. And I believe it's in Detroit. And what we like to call that in fantasy, Brad, is a revenge game.
Ah, yes.
So it's Sterling Shepard. The ultimate revenge game is going on Thursday night. You've got Kirk Cousins against the Redskins and Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
Also playing in that game. So you've got a little revenge game there. Kirk Cousins against the Redskins and Adrian Peterson against the Vikings. That should be interesting. But yeah, Golden Tate has sort of emerged as a guy that you can use as a wide receiver three as long as Sterling Shepard is out of action. And again, playing his old team next week.
A lot of savvy questions from the fans. Appreciate your time as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.
There's the Hall of Famer right there at the NFL Network. That is Michael Fabiano, who's with us week in and week out. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Saturday in Salt Lake City, we were on the sideline chatting with Ray Anderson, doing something for the TV show before the game. And we had a deep dive conversation about the parity within the conference. I'll call it cannibalism on occasion. Other sides will just say it's just parity. And Ray said, we like parity. We see the SEC where it's Alabama or LSU, Brad. We know that ACC is going to have Clemson. We like parity. Well, parity hit ASU square in the mouth because Jaden Daniels got punched by Utah. And they got kicked around. USC took care of U of A, no surprise there. So the teams here in Arizona had a rough weekend. Felt it was time, because I refer to John Wilner often on this show with the San Jose Mercury News, Pac-12 Insider, the Wilner Hotline, and it's must-read on a week-by-week basis, not just on what's going on the field, but more importantly, off the field. And I wanted to have John join us to give us a deep dive from his view on the conference with Brad Sussmat. John, how are you?
I'm good, Brad. How about yourself?
Great. Thanks for coming on board with us. I just am curious from your point of view. We're 22 months now into the Herm Edwards run out here. Same with Kevin Sumlin. What do you see big picture going on here with both these programs?
Well, certainly the big picture looks a lot brighter for ASU right now than it does for Arizona, although I don't know that it's necessarily as dim for the Wildcats as maybe, you know, some folks do down there. I still think Kevin Sumlin is going to get it going in the right direction, but it is certainly a slower process for them. And, you know, that's to be understood, too. The programs, even though they're, you know, same division and they're longtime rivals, and they both hired head coaches, you know, basically in the same, what, two-week span, three-month span, they're very different programs with very different resources and recruiting bases and histories and internal dynamics. And so it's not really apples to apples if you're going to compare the kind of the trajectories of the two new head coaches. But for ASU's purposes, you know, I think Herm has done everything right. And to me, the couple of things that stand out would be, you know, his decisions on staff hirings. I think he's got a very good staff and has been very shrewd about that. And also just their style of play. You know, you watch ASU and you can tell what they're trying to do mm-hmm. by how they're calling the game. And it's kind of an NFL style of play, right? Herm typically, you know, a little bit conservative, shorten the game, you know, and I think that's smart based on the personnel they have. They've been really good about not beating themselves. I think they have the best turnover margin in the conference since the start of last season, and it's not really even close. So just a lot of positive things from Herm for sure.
In terms of what's going on in Tucson with Kevin, it feels to me like he's doing a better job here in state, John, of getting those kids. His recruiting class this year in state is doing much better than in the last couple of years. I think in ASU space, they're trying to get out of Arizona and become more of a national brand. What are you seeing from that point in recruiting? And is that a possibility for this program with Herm to be more like a Washington or a USC where they're going after national?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think anybody's like USC in the conference. USC's got the brand that they can go in and, you know, Florida, Virginia, Ohio. You know, if USC's got it going, they can attract kids. They can pull kids out of those spots at a rate that nobody else in the conference can do it. You know, Washington is still mostly a regional recruiter. Oregon is mostly a regional recruiter. You know, here and there you go out and get kids from other places, depending on connections that your coaching staff might have. But, you know, those schools are relying primarily on Southern California and the Pacific Northwest. And if I'm ASU, I'm going to rely primarily on Southern California, Arizona, maybe a little bit of Utah, and a little bit of Texas. And if I'm ASU, I'm not going to worry about going to get somebody out of Ohio. To me, that you got to be focused with your resources. And as tempting as it might be, you know, other than, you know, kind of a one-off each year, they need to be focused on their region and protecting that home front. Arizona is producing more and more every year, more and more top-tier recruits. And both the Wildcats and Sun Devils have got to make, you know, keeping their share of those players a priority for sure.
John Wilner with us with the Wilner Hotline, San Jose Mercury News. You can check out his content. It is must read, really good deep dive stuff, not just on the field, but off of it as well. For Ray Anderson to talk about liking parity and not just having one team year in, year out. John, I think Ray has ascended here. He's actually given a sense of stability to a program that was a rudderless ship in the athletic director's office for several years. I've even said the Pac-12 should look at him if Larry Scott were to move on. What's your view of what Ray is doing in Tempe?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with you about if Larry Scott were to move on. I'm just not sure if Ray's at the point in his career that he would want to do that. I don't know either way, but certainly that would be a call that the Pac-12 leadership would be smart to make. And he has absolutely brought some stability to them. You know, they've got it. It seems like they've got the right guys in charge of both men's basketball and football at this point. And they're building facilities. Certainly what Ray is able to do has to be placed in the context of what's going on at the university and what President Michael Crow is allowing athletics to do. And you know, using what they're doing, building out all that land for commercial and real estate purposes, and then using some of the money to help with facilities and build out all their facilities, you know, is very smart. And that's what they, you know, taking advantage of what they have there.
Flip it around to what Dave Hickey is working with in Tucson.
Yeah, well, it's totally opposite. You think about all the land that ASU's got that they're developing, mm-hmm. and how they're going to use that some of that revenue to help athletics. And then you look at what and ASU's, where they got now 70,000 students. I mean, it's a totally different business model, and it's a totally different footprint than what Arizona has, right? Arizona can't even expand the stadium. You know, they need a $150 million renovation of the west side of Arizona Stadium, but they can't move it. The footprint is stuck where it is because of everything around it. They have the opposite problem in some regards with not enough land. And I think that what they've done to upgrade the stadium, you know, stage by stage, it has been very smart. The West Side project is daunting, but it's got to be done. The indoor practice facility is going to help them as well, but totally different business model with enrollment, with student fees, all that kind of things. Totally different, you know, recruiting bases within the city. There's far more players in Phoenix, obviously, than there are in Tucson. One school is, you know, basketball heavy. The other is not. It's just, they're very different. Same schools, same system, I should say. Totally different schools, totally different dynamics.
It sounds as though you're saying that U of A is in a tougher situation by a long ways than Arizona State.
Oh, much tougher in almost every regard. And, you know, it's hard to Kansas, Duke, Syracuse, who am I missing? You know, you think about the basketball schools, it is hard to win Indiana, North Carolina even. It is hard to win in football at a high level consistently for anybody, but it is especially hard for the basketball schools, right? And Arizona's certainly not alone. And then you add in the relative lack of, you know, big-time recruits that come out of Tucson on a yearly basis, and the fact that there's not a ton of history, real high-end history with Arizona football, that everybody knows it's a basketball school. It's a much tougher deal for the Arizona football coach than it is for the ASU football coach, and certainly just a tougher deal all around with regard to resources and that kind of thing.
Before I get you out of here, John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, the Wilner Hotline, must read on a weekly basis. I saw Yogi Roth in the press box up in Utah and refer to them as the Sun Devil Sports Network because he and Ted Robinson every week are doing Pac-12 Network ASU games. They have another one this week, same broadcast crew. What is going on with the same schools? Is it because Crow is so behind the network, and Ray is too, that they're willing to sacrifice and just every week be put over on Pac-12 with, I think you pointed out, it's like 16 million homes versus over 100 million with ESPN or Fox?
Yeah, ASU has certainly, and I don't know the updated numbers. I've got the list, but I haven't updated. I think ASU's got 6 Pac-12 network appearances and one non-Pac-12 network appearance for its conference games and home games. Right, the Michigan State game wasn't owned by the Pac-12, so you can't really count that. They have been on a lot, so I think there's a couple of reasons, and one is that you end up being on the Pac-12 networks a lot if you're, just below the elite level, and that's kind of where ASU is, right? I mean, the ESPN and Fox, FS1, you know, their first choice is going to be USC. It's going to be Oregon. It's going to be, in some regards, you know, Washington as well.
Yep.
ASU's good, but not quite viewed as that level of attractive TV for ESPN and Fox. And then you just have to factor in the week that, you know, who they're playing that week. And, I think ASU is going to have a chance, right? They got SC coming up in a couple of weeks, right? They got Oregon coming up in a couple of weeks.
Right.
I would be pretty surprised if those games aren't on ESPN or Fox or FS1.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and your insight. And again, good content that you put out there. A lot of work and deep dive that you put into it, John. Thanks.
Thanks a ton, Brad.
It's John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News and the Wilner Hotline, sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.